Will they find a home? Sponsored by GEICO. Steve is intrigued by the paranormal.
Otherworldly spirits really make a house a home, you know?
Janice has different taste.
I'd like my house to not be haunted.
Compromise is tough, but these two won't have to compromise when they bundle home and car insurance with GEICO. It's easy, and they could save even more. In the end, Steve and Janice found a renovated Victorian that's only haunted from 9 to 5.
Okay, wife's home. Y'all gotta bounce.
Bye, Steve.
Bundling without compromise at geico.com.
From the basement of the Bob and Tom Studios, it's That Josh Arnold Podcast. Isn't it amazing how those drummers hit that cue every time? Man, they are good. Oh, hello, my goodness. That's right. A day late, but certainly not a dollar short this week with That Josh Arnold Podcast. And I'll tell you why we're doing it a day late. Well, this happens every now and again, you know that. But the reason it happened this week is because my guest was not available until today. And I could have either canceled them or moved the show back a day. And I said, we got to move it back. I'm not missing out on having this guest. One of my favorite people, of course. My guest this week is you. It's you. Oh, my gosh. How are you? You look good. I hope you're feeling good as well. And I had the pleasure yesterday of shopping at Trader Joe's. I'm a big fan. I'm a big fan of Trader Joe's. This is not an ad. I'm just telling you that I like what they do there. I like what they sell, and I like their customer service. In fact, I love their customer service. I think it's some of the finest out there. I don't mean to, at the risk of sounding like a crotchety old man, I think good customer service is a lost art these days. And I tell you what, Trader Joe's is just exemplary customer service. And I have to assume it comes from the top down. I think all good customer service comes from the top down. So they've got good management and whatever's going on there. Keep it up, folks at Trader Joe's. But I met Tim, who works at Trader Joe's. And he was kind enough to introduce himself to me and to tell me how much he liked this podcast. And he even said, saw you, I wanted to say, in the store today we have, what just a terrific talent and a very funny person and somebody I really enjoy listening to. Of course, it's you. He gave me the intro that I give you. So it was very, very nice and very sweet. And Tim, I'll see you again at TJ's when I need more. Oh, what do I like to get there? I get mango chunks. I love that. And I love their, they have this hot, what is it? Hot Scottish smoked salmon. It's delicious. Oh, I often have it to break the fast in the mornings. And big fan of what's going on there. Tim, it was good meeting you. We'll see you again. This week's sponsor is not Trader Joe's, but it is a good one, a very important sponsoring the podcast this week. Shelves. Oh my God, where would we be without shelves? Things would just be stacked up around the wall and on the floor there. And no, you want things nicely set on shelves, don't you? They hold knickknacks. They'll hold books. They'll hold your kitchen utensils and things like that. Imagine a pantry with no shelves. It would just be a mound of food, just a pile of things, and you'd have to dig through it each time. No. Shelves, very, very important. And I hope you enjoy some shelves this week. Thank you, shelves, for sponsoring this podcast. Oh. It's hot. I'll tell you that. I don't know how it is where you are. You could easily say, Josh, it's summer. Of course it's hot. I'm talking, right now It's a weird heat where I am. It's like if you look at a thermometer, it reads maybe 82, which sounds pretty nice. But with that pesky heat index, it's like 96 or something. And it's soupy. Like when you walk outside, it's it kind of takes your breath away a little bit. You're like, it's like it feels harder to breathe, and it is stifling for sure. And down here in the basement, thankfully, this is one of those days where I'm happy to be in the basement because it's cooler. It's just sort of naturally cooler down here, but it's also humid. Like it's the walls are they're not dripping, but it feels like they could be. It's just boy. But at least it's cool down here. And you know what, though? Let's get some fresh air. Let's hop on aboard the TJA Express. That's right. That Josh Arnold Express, the Arn Track, as it's known. The only steam-powered monorail in the world. Ah, as you can hear right there. And, you know what? It is hot, but that breeze feels pretty good as we cruise along the tracks. And, oh, my gosh! Here we are, one of our favorite locations, Vocabville. Yes, yes, indeed, and a good word today. I came across this word. I was unfamiliar with it, and I stumbled across it and went, "Oh, that! How nice is that?" It's I love this word, and I love what it stands for. And without further ado, I'll share it with you. The word is Calology. Calology. It's Calology. So Calology. And it means the study of beauty. How nice is that? So it can be, you know, you could apply calological analysis, if you will, to almost, I mean, anything that you find pleasing to the eye, that you find beautiful. Art, the human form, flowers, you know, calology would fall into all of that. Botany and, as I said, the arts. What a great word and a great topic, calology. If you were to teach calology, what would the first subject be? Isn't that interesting? Would it be a man or a woman that you find particularly attractive? Would it be some sort of scenic picture or photo, some sort of panoramic view of something? Oh, would it be, you know, I would imagine that it could be used for audio as well as visual, so the beauty of music, that kind of thing. Calology, the study of beauty. Boy. And it's K-A. If you were to guess C-O, I would not. I would think that would be a fair guess because ka, like, and even in cosmetology and stuff like that, has to mean something to do with surface and beauty and things like that. So, but it's K-A. But I wonder if that syllable comes from the same root. I would have to do some further research on that. The sound itself, ka, is related. But possibly not. I could just be talking out of my patoot. But, calology, the study of beauty. I just think that notion is really, really wonderful. And maybe think on that a little bit today. What do you find absolutely beautiful? I'm sure there are many things. And, how fun. How nice to think about something that you find aesthetically pleasing. I see that we're chugging back along here on the old Arn track. And, I'm happy. I know where we're going. I have looked at the itinerary, and I see what the next stop is, and I'm happy to report that we have found ourselves, my friends. Oh, yes. Oh, listen to that. Right here in Music Junction. Oh, what a nice place to be. Everything flows in Music Junction, much like music does. There's a tempo, and there's a rhythm to life here, and how nice it is. I listened to, I was on a road trip, essentially. I drove from Indianapolis to St. Louis and back over the weekend, and I always like to try to listen to at least one album that I've never listened to before, whether it be brand new or an old album that I've just never examined top to bottom before. So this week, I was happy to see that an artist I really enjoy had a new-ish, at least, album out. And I listened to it. Her name is Elizabeth Cook, and she is just delightful. She, you may be familiar with her if you have satellite radio. She's got a show on the station Outlaw Country there called Apron Strings, and it's just great. She plays terrific music, and also she's just as delightfully Southern as can be, and she's just so delightful to listen to, and very folksy, very wise, very sweet, and also with an edge. I mean, she does not always suffer fools gladly, and she'll let you know where things sit, and it's just terrific. But she's also a wonderful musician and singer, and she has a lot of albums out there. But this new one, Aftermath, I really, really enjoyed it. One song that stuck out, well, actually it was the first single that I had heard from the album. Just the title alone, I think, would have you smiling and wanting to listen to the track. It's called Thick Georgia Woman. And, it's great. It's just great. It tells the story of, a woman. Her writing and her lyrics are very, I guess the term I would use would be Faulknerian, William Faulkner. If you've ever read any of his stuff, language itself is a character in Faulkner novels. In fact, it can be difficult to read at times because he gets in the head of the narrator so deeply that it's almost at times like reading a different language. It can be so idiomatic and so regional and folksy, and Elizabeth Cook has that in her songwriting. Just the language itself can be so interesting and indicative of a time or place or person. It's just wonderful stuff, and really, really cool sounds. Some of it is more traditional country, some of it is more alt pop country, and boy, she's got a song on there too that is a potentially. I haven't completely studied it, but the couple listens I did give to it, it seems to be a scathing indictment of popular country music. And not that I do not think that Elizabeth Cook holds any bitter feelings towards any artist or like that. I don't get that impression. But I do. It's biting. That particular. Oh boy, what is that one? It's called like. Oh, I can't remember, and I don't want to give you guys more information than I normally do. So, but you'll when you hear it, you'll absolutely know what I'm talking about. Elizabeth Cook, Aftermath, a great album. Check it out. I thoroughly enjoyed it, and I'm going to see her live in a few weeks. I have a ticket to an upcoming show of hers. So hopefully that will still take place. I know some artists are, they're kind of backing off again a little bit, going, hey, I don't know what's going on out there, but hopefully, you know, fingers crossed we can keep things on track. All right, as we make our way back to the basement, I would like to tell you guys about my weekend. As I said, I went to St. Louis. I left Sunday morning. So I kind of had the best of both worlds because I got to enjoy my Friday night at home and Saturday, in with the creature comforts of my own place. And then Sunday morning, got up, drove 4.5 hours to St. Louis. And the trip from Indianapolis to St. Louis, I gain an hour. So that's always fun because I get a little extra time then in my hometown. And went right to my brother John's house, and it was my niece's birthday the day before. My youngest niece, Eden, she's five now. And I learned that, I already knew this, but I reaffirmed my suspicions here. That a five-year-old is too young to be gifted cash. I had FaceTimed Eden before, and I said, "Hey, what do you want for your birthday?" And she wanted outrageous things that I was unwilling to provide. Look, Eden, a trampoline with a fence around it, which is what she said, that is something your parents will have to get you. Uncle Josh does not. I can't do it. That's a capital expenditure that I'm unwilling to give you. So, give me something I can deal with. I can handle. Now, what I really like to do with my niece Atlas, who is like 10 now, but what I'd like to do is for her birthday take her shopping. I go, "Hey, you got $50 to spend." And trust me, it always goes over. I always cave. And I don't think she knows that I'm caving. But she doesn't try to get me to cave, but it just happens. She'll go, "Oh, okay, well, what about these three things?" And it'll add up to $68. I'll go, "All right." But I don't tell her that. I just, okay. So anyway, but Eden at 5, I think now I can start taking her shopping. But this year, there wasn't time enough. So I didn't know what to get her. She didn't really give me a fitting present idea. So I said, "I'll just give her $50 and she can buy whatever she wants." But what I forgot, or what I knew but ignored, was that money is not really a present to a five-year-old. They want to be able to open something. They want to be able to hold a gift. They want to see a box. They want to see wrapping paper. So what I did was, she was bugging me all day about, I was only there for a couple hours, but she was bugging me the whole time. "What's my present? What'd you bring me? What's my present?" And it was cute. She's not a brat. She was being, she was just excited. And I said, "You want it? You want your gift? Huh? Is that what you want?" She loves when I act annoyed and perturbed. So she's laughing. She's like, "Yes." I took out my wallet and I took a 20 and I threw it on the ground, and I took another 20 and I threw it on the ground, and I took a 10 and I threw it on the ground, and I go, "Will you leave me alone now? $50. That's your present. You get $50. Is that enough to quiet you?" And it wasn't. She picked it up and she was happy to get it. She folded it up and she ran into her room and she put it in her piggy bank that she has. All the while, my niece Atlas is going, "Eden, that is so much money. You can really buy some good stuff with that, or you can buy Robux," which I think is some sort of video game credits or something. And Eden was like, "Okay, great." And then she came back and she goes, "But what's my present?" I go, "What are you talking about? You can buy presents with that $50. And she goes, "No, but what's my real present?" And I went, "Okay, I knew it. I knew 5 was still too young to be just given cash." But and I like to pride myself in being the world's greatest uncle. But I failed here a little bit. So, oh, well. Man, it was good to see them. They sure bring a smile. Then we played Candyland. And I tell you what, Eden, Atlas, and I played Candyland, and Eden mopped the floor with us. It was ridiculous. She won while Atlas and I were like still way at the bottom. And, you could say it's the luck of the cards, but the Candyland gods sure were on her side that day. And she let us know that she was the winner. Man, oh, man. And then I ended up coming in second. And I was pretty proud of that. I was just happy not to be last like Atlas was. Poor child. So we had a little celebration there. And then my oldest brother, Jeff, and my brother just below me, John, we set out to go to a concert. It was my youngest brother, Joey Wednesday, could not make it. He had to work the next morning. As did John and Jeff, but Joe lives in Springfield, Missouri, so he couldn't make the trip and back. I just took off work. In fact, I told Tom on the air that I was taking off work so that if he said no, he would look like a jerk in front of millions of people. And Tom's always very good. Sometimes Tom's too good at letting us know that if we need or would like time off, we can. Because sometimes out of nowhere, and this always sort of is disconcerting to Chick and I, he'll just come up and go, you know, if you want to take some time off, you certainly can. And I'm like, what? What are you? Do you think I need time off? Are you? What are you? What's your angle here? Why do you want me gone? But no, he really is just being generous and saying, hey, you know, we all need a break. If you need one, go for it. So anyway, the concert we went to was a festival. It had been going on for 3 days already, and we were going to the last day. I would have loved to have gone the whole time. It's called the Open Highway Music Festival. And it was in St. Louis, and it's mostly indie country, some rock, a lot of, you know, some outlaw country. And it was just, man, the lineup was, the Old Crow Medicine Show was there the first night, and Sunvolt played Saturday, and a bunch of other just wonderful bands. Well, we were just going Sunday because one of our favorite performers was going to be there, Paul Cawthon, and we had never seen him live before. We've been listening to his stuff just wearing it out, and which is impossible to do, by the way. I'm still not tired of any of it, but just playing the hell out of it when we go on our fishing trips and getting together, and really excited to see him live. And we were also lucky that there were other great artists there, Flatland Cavalry, and closing the festival was Whitey Morgan and the 78s, and they're a terrific outlaw country band. They're just awesome. And I'm failing to mention a few other, Alexandra Kay and, Morgan. I do not remember. I want to get her name right because she is wonderful. Morgan Wade, of course. Yeah. She's excellent. But anyway, we show up, we leave, we get there around 3 p.m., and as we're walking to the amphitheater, it was all outdoors, a gentleman carrying a chair heading back to his car goes, hey, they're not letting people in right now. There's lightning in the area, and there was. There was a storm rolling in. So they've asked everybody to leave the park and just kind of wait in your cars until this passes. Well, we looked at the radar and could tell that this storm was going to linger for a couple hours. So we said, all right, well, let's just go to a bar. We'll have a drink. We'll hang out. And then we'll come back in a couple hours when this thing passes. And it started storming like crazy. I mean, it was a big storm, a ton of lightning and thunder. We drive around and we find this cool place. Grab a beer. And we ended up getting some wings, and my brothers and I chatted, about how we were doing in life and joking around and everything, and already having a terrific time, even though we hadn't made it to the concert yet, a concert that we were very, very excited to go to. So a couple hours, you know, were spent there, a couple beers are had, 2 pounds of wings among the three of us, and the rain stops, we go, all right, let's head back to the festival, and we get there. And stand in line for maybe 10 minutes, and then they let us in. Now, normally, this festival would have thousands of people would have been there. But the weather, and maybe a couple other things, maybe, you know, the news has scared some folks off from doing things. Maybe the fact that it was a Sunday as well, and people were working the next day, kept some folks away. But we walk in to this area, and there are two stages. There's a main stage, of course, in the big amphitheater area. And then there's a side stage just in this sort of smaller field. And, I mean, we're looking around going, there must be 250 people here. And if it stays like this, how blessed are we going to be to see some of our favorite performers and some of these other performers that we're not as familiar with, but we trust will be great. It was in such an intimate setting, and more people funneled in as the day went on. But I think at max there were 500 people in a setting that should that could have accommodated 10,000. And so, you know, we're walking around getting having some drinks and sitting or standing wherever we want, as close to this stage as we like, as far away as we like, watching these terrific musicians. And part of me felt bad for them. It's like, oh, man, these folks are deserving of much bigger crowds. They're, quite frankly, used to much bigger crowds. But I also I couldn't help but think, how blessed are we that, especially if Paul Coffin rolls around and we're just right up at the stage, and it's going to be unbelievable. And folks, that's what happened. And the weather, it was also when we first arrived before they told us we couldn't come in, it was like 94 degrees. It was almost a nearly unbearable heat. Because again, the heat index and the humidity and everything were really making it bad. But when that after that storm rolled through, it was gorgeous. I mean, like a like 76 and cool breeze and oh man. So that's how we enjoyed the concert. It was a gigantic outdoor facility, not gigantic, but a big outdoor facility. But with very few people, so it was intimate. And when Paul Coffin, so we're watching Flatland Cavalry, and they're on the main stage at the time, and we're going, man, should we just go over to the side stage? Because Paul Coffin's going to start in like 20 minutes, and you know, we want to make sure. And so we did walk away from Flatland, unfortunately, because they were terrific. There's nothing like, even if country isn't your thing, sitting down and watching a full whether it be country or bluegrass or a band, is so delightful. I mean, they had guitarists, somebody on slide guitar, you know, the pedal steel, and you know what? I might be mixing up a couple bands, by the way. But a big country band will have all that, and a fiddler, and all the, and it's just so cool to watch. It's just so fun because each instrument will have a solo at some point, and it's just good stuff. So we did have to walk away from them. We went over to Paul's stage, and it didn't take long for us to realize, man, this is. I mean, we're going to be here. I mean, we're going to be right here in the center of the action, and not shoulder to shoulder with people, not crammed. We're just going to be enjoying this. And we were so excited that we got a beer before his show. And within 10 minutes, I went, I need another beer. I inadvertently just sort of slammed that one in anticipation. And I don't know if you're like me. I love to have a beer during the music because I like to toast the musicians. And I like to, if a song I love, I like to drink to it. And I mean, I think everybody kind of likes that. So we quickly went over to the beer stand and got another beer. And then Paul started. And if you've ever been lucky enough to be at a show where you're able to make eye contact with a performer, that is really something. That is whatever it is, whether it's stand up or music or even like a speaker. Let's say you're at a TED Talk. And you make eye contact with whoever it is that's up there talking. It's a pretty cool feeling. It's like, oh my gosh, somebody I really admire and respect has seen me as a person. Like and ideally they see that I'm enjoying myself. And I always love that. When I first started stand-up comedy, I used to look out over the audience. And it wasn't intentional, but it was that's just what I would do. I would never focus on people. I would never look really at them. I would just sort of look at the crowd as a whole. And oftentimes I was looking over them, like performing to straight ahead. And then I went, what am I doing up here? I need to be speaking to folks. And this audience is here. Why am I not talking to them? And so I started making eye contact. And stand-up became that much more enjoyable for me. Now, every now and again, I'll look up in the crowd and make eye contact with somebody. And I'll hit a punchline, and they'll sit stone-faced staring at me. And I go, oh, well, they didn't care for that. And for a second, I go, oh, man, I must not be doing my job. And they're like, well, no, you never know why somebody doesn't laugh at something. It's okay that they don't find it funny. other people are like, whatever. I try not to play to the people who aren't laughing. You know, I try to play to the people who are laughing. Because sometimes I never assume that it's me. Maybe I should. But a lot of times you just go, okay, that's a tough nut to crack. And there's a possibility that they just had a terrible argument with their spouse before coming in here. You never know what's going on. And so I never give anybody a hard time for not laughing. I will occasionally, if somebody's laughing a lot and then they don't laugh at a particular joke and they're up front, I will go, oh my gosh, I'm sorry, ma'am. You didn't like that one or whatever? Just to kind of keep things alive, you know, keep things fresh. I don't want to be a record up there. I want to be in the moment and performing for who's there. So I do kind of like try to shake myself out of the routine by doing things like that. I never mean to pick on people in the audience. I don't like that. I never like... particularly if it's a smaller crowd. I've seen comedians go up and go, where the hell is everybody? Jeez, well, let's get this over with. It's like, man, what? You're going to give the people who showed up a hard time? In fact, I do the opposite. What I do is if it's a small crowd, I'll walk up and go, just so you know, you made the right decision. And then I point to the empty seats and I go, those people screwed up. You guys made, and immediately the audience goes, oh, yes, yeah. Yeah, I'm never going to give, and you know what? These artists at this festival didn't either. I know when Paul Cawthon walked out at 7:30 p.m. and saw a couple hundred people where he would normally see a couple thousand people, well, he's a professional. He probably went, yeah, the weather chased a bunch of people away. And the threat of further inclement weather, because there was some, kept people away and stuff like that. Then he went, all right, well, this is what it is. He may have, who knows what else? There may have been promotional issues with the festival itself. I don't know. I don't live in that area anymore, so I don't know how well it was promoted, that kind of thing. But he probably prefers walking out on stage to thousands as opposed to hundreds. And as I said before, he deserves to walk out to thousands. But in this case, there were only hundreds, and he didn't give us a hard time about it. In fact, at one point he said, hey, thank you guys for sticking around. You know, that kind of thing. And I'll tell you what, every performer there acted like they were performing to 10,000 people. They sure did. That's what a good performer does. That's what a good artist does. Regardless of the crowd size, you are going to get, my best show, that kind of thing. So, boy, we had a time. He opened with one of his best songs, or, you know, I should say one of our favorite songs, because all of his songs are just so great. And it's called Holy Ghost Fire. And we're singing along, my brothers and I, and just so thrilled to be watching Paul for the first time, and so happy to be hearing one of our favorite songs played live. And it ends, and my brother John goes, that was just the first song. And we were like, yes, it was. We have another at least 50 minutes or whatever of just, and we had just a terrific time dancing and singing along and yelling out. And I did that thing that I never do, but I was excited. But you've seen this at concerts before, where during in between songs, it got kind of quiet and I yelled out the name of a song I wanted to hear. And he didn't play it. And I was dismissed quite egregiously. But what I like to think is, and by the way, I had been tying one on. I normally wouldn't have yelled out, but I was six beers in or whatever. Our hotels were right there, so we had no, you know, there was no worry about having to get back to someplace or anything. So What I like to think is that when Paul, because Paul heard me, there's no way he didn't hear me. The song's called Resignation. I go, Resignation! And I like to think that he at least went, well, we're not playing that in his head, but I appreciate that somebody likes that song or whatever. And that he, I hope that he didn't think, ah, geez, what a douchebag yelling out. Just let me play my set or whatever. Who knows? Anyway, something also happened here. Well, real quick, I was talking about when you make, if you're ever lucky enough to be close enough at a show and make eye contact with a person. One time I was in, when it was when I was working with Rawlings Sporting Goods, and I was in Dallas, Texas. I forget what event was going on, and I was by myself, and it was my birthday, and I went, well, what am I going to do? Just go out to a, you know, have a nice steak or something, and then we'll see. So I went out, and I had a nice dinner, and as I was at dinner, I was looking through the, like, man, every city has those little papers, like those newspapers, and this was back in, what, 2001, 2002, so it's not like I, you know, people were getting on their cell phones a lot to check the internet and see what was going on. But every city had, has, or at least had those little papers that would tell you what was happening in the city that week. So there'd be stories and stuff, but it was mainly to tell you what concerts were going on, what restaurants were new or hip at the time or whatever, all that stuff. So I'm kind of looking through one of those, and I see that Alanis Morissette is in town that night. With her opener, Ryan Adams, and they're downtown at one of the big arenas. And I went, man, it's my birthday. I've always loved Alanis Morissette, and I do. And I love Ryan Adams. And I went, do I need to just go to this? And I finished dinner. I went, yeah, I'll just go down to that arena and see if they have any tickets left. And so I went by myself to that concert venue, to the box office. I said, what do you guys have left? And she said, well, we have some pit tickets. And I went, oh, okay, so that's just right down there by the stage? And she goes, yeah, you just stand right down there by the stage. And I went, all right, you don't have a seat? And she's like, no, but we've got these pit tickets. I went, okay, I'll take how much? And it wasn't cheap, but I had money, you know, I was working at the time, and so I think it was $100 or something. I still have the stub. I'd have to look. And so I go, yeah, I'll take one. And so she's like, great. So I go in, and the place is packed. Of course, it's sold. All the seats are sold out. But there were the pit tickets. There were only five of us in the pit. It was like a 40-foot by 20-foot or whatever space in front of the stage with five people in it. Like I guess, and it made sense to me a little bit. It's like, who goes to get Alanis Morissette tickets? Because we need to be in the pit. Not a lot of people. You don't need, there's not going to be moshing and stuff like that. And typically, I would imagine, at an Alanis Morissette concert. So I'm standing there with a couple couples going, is this how it's going to, and then the show started. Like, my gosh, we're right here. We've got all this room to ourselves. And Ryan Adams puts on a killer set. And then he finishes. And I went, certainly they're going to bring out, like, a group that purchased all the pit tickets besides, like, five. And they're all going to come out. Like, it'll be like, it'll be like, Cub Scouts or something. I thought like maybe a big organization purchased, like kind of essentially bought out the pit. But no, Alanis Morissette comes out and there are five of us standing right in front of her. I mean, and a sold out arena behind us. But it was like it felt like she was putting on a concert just for us. And I made eye contact with Alanis Morissette probably 100 times. And some of it was really like extended where, and by the way, she was not in any way flirting with me or anything like that. But she would sing a full line right into my eyes. And I had already had kind of a crush on her, so I'm just falling in love, of course, because she's singing Isn't It Ironic right to my face, and we're staring at each other, and we're both smiling. And but of course she's just looking at me because I'm one of the only people that she can see. And so, but it was incredible. It was like having a private show, and it was my birthday, so I'm just going, oh, man, this is incredible. So, man, I just had an absolute ball, and I felt like a king. Having Alanis Morissette, who was the soundtrack of my 95 and potentially 96, sing, and we're staring right at each other. It was just, and she's just so happy and so positive. She does this thing live, at least she was then. I hope she still does this in concert, where she would put her hand to her heart and then like, and then her hand would sort of explode off her chest like it was a firework, like psh, and she even kind of, you could see her lips pursing like psh, psh, like love was exploding out of her into the crowd. Like, I just love you guys so much, and I'm just throwing love like it were glitter coming out of my heart all over. And so she was just doing that. I was like, oh, she loves us, and she's doing this great music, and we're looking at each other. And I have to marry her now. And it was just such a wonderful feeling and a great, great experience and a great birthday. I think I was 22 or something, and it was just awesome. So, and that's how this festival was, where we were making a lot of eye contact and really in the moment with some of our favorite performers. And then we went, we moved after Paul just crushed it, and we had, my brothers and I had such a happy, fun time. The only bummer was that our youngest brother wasn't there, Joey. Yeah, I mean, he would have loved it too, of course, and so we missed him. But after Paul, we went over to the back to the main stage and watched Whitey Morgan, and he just brought the house down. And again, not a lot of people at all. In fact, less people than I think were watching Paul, because the night was going on and it was getting later, and Monday morning was rearing its head, and so people were sort of leaving, which is no comment on the quality of Whitey Morgan in the 78s at all, because I tell you, the folks that were there, hardcore fans, I mean, singing along to every word. And my brothers and I decided not to stand up near the stage this time, but to sit in some of the chairs real close, and we had a whole row to ourselves, and we're just sitting there spread out with a and we're doing that idiotic thing, too, where we're on, like, beer 7 and 8. But the show's about to over, so hey, go get 2 more for each of us. Just that dumb thing where you're already feeling good and you go, I don't want to stop drinking. But all that does is just increase your hangover the next day. So, so, but, yeah, we were sitting there double fisting and listening to Whitey Morgan and singing to singing along and just out in the open air. And I, you know, you get these feelings when you're at a concert where you go, this is what life is about. You know, you've got a good buzz, or at this point we were drunk. We were. And where you go, life, I don't need anything else but live music and beer and a car, because I'm going to travel the country following all these people and listening to their music every night. This is what I'm doing with my life now. And then, of course, of course, that's you can't, but you don't care. You just go, oh boy, and we just had a terrific time, and it felt so good to be out and listening to live music, and yeah, it made me also want to be a better performer in my live shows, you know, in my stand up. To go, oh boy, If I could make somebody feel half as good as these musicians are making me feel now, what a joy, what a blessing. And so I went, all right, I don't want to rest on my laurels ever again. I want to work hard for audiences that take the time and money to come out and see me. So just a wonderful time. I also ran into a buddy of mine, Shane, who I met at the St. Louis Funny Bone. He was he's a huge comedy fan and a huge music fan, and I ran into him at this concert, And when I saw him, I went, of course, Shane's here. He's one of the biggest supporters of live music and comedy that I've ever known. He's one of those guys that if he doesn't recognize a band, he doesn't go, oh, okay, well, I'll just wait until somebody's coming that I know. He goes, oh, well, I got to go see them. I've never heard of them. I need to see. I mean, how incredible is that? To just go, hey, I don't know who's performing tonight, but I'm going to the concert. I mean, that's so great. Not enough of us do that. So I got to talk to him for a bit, and it's always a pleasure seeing him. I also wanted to mention, Paul Cawthon did something that I've never seen. I've never really experienced totally at a concert before. He, in the middle of a set, he goes, hey, I've got a new song I'd like to play for you guys now. Would you like to hear it? Now, normally when this happens, the crowd is polite, but not overjoyed. You know, they're you want to hear the hits and the songs that you know and that you're familiar with. Well, of course we're polite. Yes, we want to hear it. And he goes, it's called... It's called Champagne in a Limo. And my brothers, we went, the whole crowd went berserk at just that title because if you've listened to Paul, of course it's called that. Of course he now has a song called Champagne in a Limo. And he played it, and it's an instant classic. I've never seen a crowd respond to a new song that they'd never heard before so well. And hats off to Paul Cawthon. The song is great, and by the end of it, the crowd was singing along. It's so catchy that we knew the main hooks and chorus. And he, I'd love to think that he was just thrilled that we were eating up this new song. So after that, he goes, you want to hear another new one? And of course, we're all pumped up, and it's just as good. Two back-to-back home runs with two new songs that the crowd hadn't heard. We're all losing our minds. This is another one that we're able to sing along to by the end. Just going, oh, wait, I can't wait to listen to these again. And this is not only does this guy come out and play the songs we love, he plays new songs that we instantly love. How often does this happen at a concert? And so he after that second new one, he plays some more familiar tunes, and he goes, all right, I've got another new one. And this song was, again, instant classic. It's so good and so catchy. I mean, these hits, and my brother John, he goes, if I could buy stock in a person, I'm buying stock in Paul. Those, he could be a superstar, in our opinion. Those three songs will all be hits and will just further propel him into outlaw country stardom, and maybe even in crossover, because his music is real funky, and you don't have to be a hardcore country fan to like it. And so that also just sort of said to me, boy, what a special night this is. We're seeing him with in a very intimate setting, and we may not be able to do this again unless one of us becomes a millionaire and we can hire him to do one of our birthday parties. which I would absolutely do if I ever fall into huge amounts of money. So hats off to everybody at the Open Highway Music Festival, artists and audience. The audiences were great. Good people enjoying good music, and just having a good time. And what I would like for us to work on this week is... Oh, gosh. That is... I forgot how good this tune is, right? Always makes me happy. I would like us this week to be like Shane, my buddy who supports the performing arts like no one else I know. Now, you don't have to go to a concert for somebody that you've never heard of. You don't have. We should at some point. But this week, just support somebody you like. Buy... an album or rent a movie, not something that's essentially free on Netflix or something like that, or on Spotify, but maybe spend a little money on an artist. And you don't have to do that. You do not have to spend money this week. You can also just post about somebody that you really appreciate. Post a picture of your favorite musician and maybe a short blurb about why they're important to you or how they make you feel. Post about your favorite filmmaker or author or maybe even an independent artist. You know, oh my gosh, my friend Beth paints these gorgeous pictures, and I just want to share them with you. And please go check out her work. Spread the word about an artist that you really appreciate. I know I always like it when you write in with your recommendations. I've gotten to enjoy a lot of what you guys enjoy. I really love that. So yes, support some artists you like. By the way, I am on tour again, and if you go to thatjosharnold.com, you can find my schedule. Coming up August 27th, 28th, Louisville, Kentucky at the Caravan. The next week, the week after that, Labor Day weekend, the 4th and 5th, so that's Saturday and Sunday, I will be at the Funny Bone in Liberty Heights, Ohio, just the Cincinnati area there. And then on the 10th, I'll be in Indianapolis at the Irving Theater with Greg Warren. I told these people I'm not working with Greg Warren, but no, they insisted. And finally, I got the numbers where I wanted it. I agreed. All right, for that amount of money, I'll do it. But I'll be at Irving Theater, Indianapolis, September 10th. And then the weekend after that, the return to Toledo, Ohio. That's right, the 17th and 18th of September, Toledo, Ohio. Tickets are available now. I've got plenty of other shows as well after those dates. So just check it out at thatjoshreynolds.com or my Instagram, at thatjosharnold. And don't forget to next week, goodbye!
Sehr gut, sehr gut, sehr gut.
Sehr gut?
Wieso Steuer ist sehr gut? Das sagen ganz viele.
Wer sagt das?
Stiftung Warentest, Computerbild, Focus Money, Chip, Finanztipp, such dir was aus.
Mega, aber das ist doch bestimmt kompliziert.
Nö, einfach Foto von der Lohnsteuerbescheinigung machen und fertig.
Klingt sehr gut.
Ist sehr gut. Mit Wieso Steuer? Bis zum 31. Juli abgeben.